Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Human Reaction Podcast. I'm David Rand. Now, this last week, we had some incredible interview between Tucker Carlson interviewing Mike Huckabee. And this debate that they have about Christian Zionism was fascinating, kind of depressing in many ways, but fascinating in so many other ways. And one of the things that piqued my interest was this analysis by Matt Walsh that we're going to be digging into and talking about rights. But before we do, please like, comment, subscribe, get into there, and let us know what you think. We are limited by the algorithm in so many ways. We talk about things on this podcast. We try to be as uncensored as possible. Like, anytime I at all hedge a little bit, I just get this look from Joe that's like, what are you doing, man? And I understand it. But we really are reliant on your support by joining a member at humanreactionpod.com and by your just liking and commenting and just getting in there. We get lots of people who watch our shows. We get hundreds of people sometimes, but we only get like three or four comments, and that really limits our reach. So if you can get in there and just say, hey, man, loved it. Keep going. I need that encouragement sometimes. Please help me out. Just get in there and just say, for the algo, I like this podcast. And then if you could send it to your friends, like, that organic sharing really makes a difference. So thank you so much for watching. Let's get into it.
Okay, so then what does it mean for a country to be entitled to exist? Well, I don't know what that means. I truly don't. Entitled based on what? You know, the only way that any country has ever come into existence, ever, is through force. There are no exceptions to this rule on the planet, and there never have been, and there never will be. No country exists unless it has forced its own existence violently. And no country continues to exist unless it continues to insist on its own existence through force, through violence. The very idea that any country, any nation, that the political entity of a nation is entitled to exist is incoherent. It makes no sense. You know, I make this point about the Native Americans all the time. Now, you often hear people who are on the pro-Israel side, they'll say that, well, Israel is the only country where that has to justify its own existence. Right? It's the only country where people has to constantly justify its own existence. Well, every time I hear that, I think, well, have you ever heard of America? What are you talking about?
That is accurate on a lot of ways. And I'm very sympathetic to this argument. But I have this quibble, and I think the quibble is important because I see it like as a... and maybe I'm making too big of a deal out of it. I'm open to that case. I'm making too big of a deal out of my criticism I'm going to be bringing. But I do see it as a slightly larger criticism of problems I'm seeing happening in conservatism. And it's related to how we feel about power when in power. And it's like a trend. It's a pattern I'm seeing a lot of. So I would just want to try to fairly state Walsh's argument because I don't want to play the whole video. Go watch the whole video for sure. Let me know what you think. Comment, all that kind of stuff. Especially if you think I'm wrong, but also comment if you think I'm right. So Matt Walsh presents the might makes right theory, really, here of political philosophy in a sense. But he does gain like a very solid basis for this argument. He just deviates right at the end, right? But he deviates into might makes right when, as he's building his foundations, I fundamentally agree with a lot of those foundations. He just makes this right at the end. So nations come into existence through force. That's true. I might have some quibbles with the difference between country and nation. These are different things, or state. States are different than countries. Countries are different than nations. These are all actually different sociological terms that do matter in distinguishing what we're talking about. But we're podcasting here. We're kind of riffing a little bit. He's kind of talking about the larger way that these words are used. Like, for example, rights are entitlements. It is used that way sometimes, but that's not the actual what the word means. It's not actually that. So what do we actually mean? Well, actually, let's talk about the philosophy of rights and things like that. Because then I might actually give us some insight into what we mean by that a nation has a right to exist. But it is true that nations survive through force. Nations persist. States, really, would be a more accurate word. States persist through their monopoly on violence. In his cases, therefore, it makes no sense to say that a nation has a right to exist. Now, rights language doesn't meaningfully apply to geopolitical entities, therefore, right? That's where he's going with it. And that's right. And in fact, like an old formulation used for a very long time, and the first person I heard say it, but it's older than him, is the great Dr. Ron Paul would say, states don't actually have rights. So the 10th Amendment isn't that. The 10th Amendment is about the contractual nature of the federal government. Although we shorthand it with states' rights, states don't actually have rights. They have the powers that we delegate to them. They don't have rights. Individuals have rights. Ultimately, what Walsh is talking about when he's articulating his states arrive through force theory is the conqueror's theory of the state. States historically rise through conquest, consolidation, war, and struggle. The problem that he has is that he's moving from a descriptive claim about the conqueror's theory, about how things come into existence, into a normative claim about whether rights apply at all. Because what do we mean when we say a country has a right to exist? Now, he has this premise he's using here that says, as long as they can defend it premise. And in fact, Huckabee uses that premise and then immediately backs off of it because of how problematic it is. I appreciate that Walsh is willing to just sit there in that a little bit. So ultimately, it begs this question, you know, as long as they can defend it, they have a right to exist kind of question. As long as they're willing to use force, they have a right to exist. That kind of twists what the word right means as a moral theory. It asks the question, once you say, as long as you can defend it, then you get to have it. Does that mean might makes right? Is it right to conquer and take what one will? And the strong will take what they will, and the meek and the powerless will have to simply make do. Will suffer what they must. Or the alternative to that I would advocate, is there a moral sensibility to the universe, a natural law to humans that we can deduce with our minds? Something that says that there is a just and unjust use of force, that there are right moral behavior and wrong moral behavior. And if we think that, then we say, what are those bounds? Maybe we can't articulate all the bounds. Maybe we got to have some faith in a lot of the oughts, but maybe we can morally, reasonably, rationally deduce most of the ought-nots. Maybe. So let me give you the alternative theory, the older theory, the original theory of rights, in short, just to remind you, because I'm sure you know this, my audience, because my audience is very smart and very educated, but just in case you haven't, or maybe just need a refresher. The theory goes something like this, and they're talking John Locke's Second Treatise on Government, 1688, way back in the day. I think that's the right date. It's something like this. Like, God creates man. God gives him natural rights, him and her. And man creates government to protect said rights. Therefore, governments that go beyond the security of those rights, securing of those rights, to life, liberty, and property, pursuit of happiness if you're American, can be justified in being overthrown and replaced with one government that will. Now, in a sense, this theory agrees with Walsh. He's kind of cutting parallel, like perpendicular, not perpendicular, across it. Cali-wampus to it, if you will. No state has a right to exist because rights are concepts that human reason invented to describe the relationship that exists between human actors. Because it doesn't treat the government as a different sort of thing from individuals, because governments are just made up of individuals. Now, the content of this concept defines things such as aggression, aggressive violence, defensive violence, peace, dignity, freedom, And it judges, and really importantly, like the most important part of this that distinguishes it from other moral theories or theories of power is it distinguishes them on good and bad. Aggressive force is bad. Therefore, you have a right to self-defense. Peace is good. Therefore, you have a right to self-defense. Dignity is good. Therefore, you have a right to not have your past stolen by theft or your future stolen with slavery, to put it in the classical sense. That there's a fundamental equality that all men are created equal. And in America, we just believe that. That's our founding document. The Declaration of Independence just says, that's what we are. If you don't think that, then you're just not an American. Sorry. And what we mean there isn't that everyone's the same. What we mean by that, very importantly, is that before God, we all have equal dignity, something about us that is inherently deserving of an equality in which we should be governed, in which we should be, you know, have our freedoms and privileges as an American. And I always liked, and I always say this because I just want to popularize it again, is that the levelers way back in the day, there's like pre-Magna Carta English radical movement. And this is like the oldest school form of egalitarianism. You can really, it's difficult to find an older school way of thinking in egalitarian terms classically. And it is that no man was born with a saddle on his back and no man with spurs on his feet. Man, that's good. You know, and there's something about that just like articulate. If you disagree with that, I'm just like, who are you? What do you think? I can't have a hard time conceptualizing that kind of human. But it was turning back to my argument. Sorry for the long digression there. But I would disagree with Walsh in that my theory would affirm that peaceful people of all kinds have a right to live unmolested by aggressors, including aggressors of another state or another people or their own government. That there's some domain that is naturally mine that I can define with my reason and that we can agree on contractually as a social order and then arrive at a set of norms that we call natural rights to govern our culture by. Getting back to I think what his error is the is of the conqueror theory, the correct description of the inherent violence of the state does not imply that there is no ought not determined by natural law. And maybe he just doesn't get there. Maybe he does agree with me about that and he's going to find his way there. But I just want to see it because I think he's definitely creates the foundation for the might makes right theory, because ultimately he actually makes the case of this. It seems definitely implied. He doesn't use these words, but in his case about the Native Americans, as he's about to get into in the clip that I played, of a theory of blood guilt. He makes the case that the fact that earlier Native tribes conquered other tribes earlier than them, therefore there's no right claim by whites conquering them. Now, this issue is a difficult issue to contend with, especially where I'm from. And in my background and upbringing and all that kind of stuff, it's really understandable. And I do hate the white guilt thing about our society. I don't like land acknowledgements or anything like that. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a progressive. But I do think we have to have a universal ethic. And that universal ethic does seem to imply that just because my great-grandfather's, you know, Lakota conquered another tribe, named a different one that was wiped out in that process, and now we live on this land, doesn't give someone else a right to conquer me. If that's true, then everything is just power games on down. Like there's no moral calculus whatsoever possible by humans simply because our blood carries the guilt of our ancestors. There's no higher aim. There's no greater dignity to mankind. No moral calculus that we can rise above or virtue that we can attain. It's really just, well, it's all based upon force anyways. So therefore, I'm just going to get mine while I can. That's the underlying moral premise, I fear. So I want to distinguish this, and I think the reason why conservatives wind up in this place is that they have a moral theory. At least they start applying moral theories to collectives in order to engage with the discussion about this thing. And then it gets all twisted up. And I'm just going to say, no. Your moral theory is just apply to individuals and it'll keep making sense. As soon as you start applying to collectives, it starts getting really fuzzy, especially because the nature of humans is that we aren't our parents. Right? Like, we get a lot from our parents, but we're not them. We're not actually them. And it's even harder to say once you're a parent, because you kind of like look at your kid and you're like, man, you're like a little me. That's a really easy mistake to make, but it's a mistake not to make too. You can pass things down. You can give them a lot, but they're not actually you, right? They're their own individual, their own being, their own creature. They only have their own unique gift from God that makes them different from us. And that's a good thing. So, the way out of the Native American trap and I think the Palestinian trap, you know, because I really agree with Tucker on this, right? The theory has to apply to Palestinians, Israelis, Germans, and the Irish. It has to apply to all of them. It has to give the same moral character to the people and the victims who are just regular folks who just happen to go to the wrong concert at the wrong time. The same moral status as the person who showed up at the Great March of the Return and was shot in the face by an Israeli sniper. They were both people aggressed upon, right? And that is wrong. And if we stay there, then we know we're on the right ground. Because the world is complicated, man. It's hard to find your way through all the traps of the historical details, and you try to contend with it the best you can, not being an expert in everything, trying to be an expert in some areas, but not all areas. And you find yourself, where can I land that I feel that I know that I'm on the right side of this, in the sense of like, I don't want to put toxicity into the world. What I want to put into the world are good things to make the world a better place. Cause I got a stake in it. Got kids, man. I got family and friends. I want the world to be a better place, not a worse place. You know, just simple things like that. And if we apply the clear moral thinking of natural law and natural right theory, I think we're almost always there, especially when we apply it to individuals. So this all becomes clear when you see war and conquest as group killing and not a euphemism, right? If you just see it in abstract, you're like, well, one group conquered the other, and I guess they occupy that land now. And this is Mike Huckabee's mistake, amongst others, is, you know, well, I mean, they occupy it, so therefore it's theirs. Possession's not in the law. But that avoids how you got it, right? And it also, so in returning to how to escape that trap, is this mental model I've been talking about for a couple of years now, and I really want it to hopefully sink larger than my podcast here, and it's this: that in the choice between peace and justice, the best moral systems are the ones that reconcile justice when they can, but otherwise aim for peace. That the ultimate difference between the feudal, like the previous systems, like prior to the Dane Law, or like the prior to writing down laws, was the arbitrariness of it. Was the group will of law, and ultimately, it did emphasize peace. It could emphasize peace, but the objective law, you know, it's eternal. Right. It sits on the paper and it stays there. Right. The Constitution, the old laws from like the 1700s and stuff like that, 1600s. They're all there. And you can read them and observe them and see how they've changed in interpretation and things like that. Anyways, my point being that when making the moral judgment, peace should be justice most of the time, because peace is the ultimate ends. Right. The reconciliation is really what we need, because justice is a finite game. A bad thing happened. And we went through a process to try to punish the bad guy. We got justice. But the question is, what happens after that? And that's the life game, right? The justice game's short. The life game is long. And the life game's the peace game, is what gets you to peace. And the things that taboo aggression, like conquering, because it's, you know, the cool thing to do, or it's what defines true things, or what defines rights, is your ability to maintain your conquering. That does not lead to peace, right? And it so avoids justice because it has to define away justice into these concepts of rights are actually just our ability to conquer. That the right is made by our might. So, and that's what I'm trying to get at here, is that the right to exist, as the Zionists are using, I'm not sure I agree with that, because this kind of looks like the right to conquer, actually. What it looks like is the right to take land from people who were living there. And that's what the Great March of the Return is. If you're not sure what that is, go check it out. It's a very interesting moment in Israeli history, in Palestinian-Israeli struggle. And I'm very sympathetic to both sides here. The existing Israelis are in a situation where, you know, perhaps their parents or grandparents did something very bad, right? Very much not that different from how people out west feel in America, where you're like, man, you know, some of that was pretty nasty stuff. Hate to see that. And in this navigation between peace and justice, we got to get there because that's what our children deserve, right? As much as they deserve justice, what they really deserve is peace. And how can we get there? Well, it's going to require some reconciliation with justice. I'm sure about that. If you're literally holding a key to a house that was stolen from you, yeah, you get some justice, right? But if you're just born in the Palestinian territories, you're just born in Jerusalem or the wrong area in Jerusalem or the right area in Jerusalem, how do we get to a place where it's peace? That should be the bigger question. Then how do we make sure we punish enough Zionists, or how do we make sure we punish all the Palestinians for this terrible thing that they did in the first Intifada, the second Intifada, or October 7th, or whatever date? Right? How do we get there? That's the real question. You know, just return to that. And that's the great thing about natural law, is it returns us to that very quickly. Because this is, we can't know everything, but we can know this narrow bit, which is that organized violence or unorganized violence is the wrong thing. And the right thing is the thing that makes us whole. The right thing is the thing that brings us back into a relationship that has clear boundaries, clear property boundaries to what is just behavior. And that's what natural rights were established culturally, normatively, to establish. Was peace, by saying these are the things that are cannot do. I'm not going to tell you everything you should do, but I will tell you what you can't do. And that's don't steal, don't take people's stuff, don't murder, don't enslave. So in summary, Walsh is correct that states aren't metaphysical entities with intrinsic entitlements. That's as you, entitlements are rights. And there's something right about that. But if we reduce national existence to just the raw force, we slide from the classical kind of realism I think he's going for of, you know, this is how things work, and there's something true about that. From that power theory we slide from that power theory into a place where, you know, justice is the standard, by power replaces justice for the standard behavior. Natural law doesn't grant governments mystical rights. Natural rights is a concept that seeks to subject governments to moral constraints. That's why governments hate them. that's why we are constantly having to revive this concept, is because, God, it's a difficult one for people to contend with, but it's maybe the right one. The question isn't whether nations, you know, can survive. The questions are whether its actions are just. And that's what conservatives should be asking now. Is are our government's actions just? Are they respecting our rights? Are they respecting the rights of other people? Or are we being the aggressor? Because we aren't our government. The government is a thing that was on top of us, that we were born into, an arrangement of power that we are in. It is not the thing that actually tells me what my or your, dear listener, moral status is. That's other people who live in Washington, D.C.'s status. Are they doing the right thing with your tax dollars, though? That's the worthy discourse that we should be having. So, hope that was fun for you, as it was for me. Appreciate your time. Please like, comment, subscribe. We got a Discord. Go check it out. It's a lot of fun. In there darn near every day lately. A lot of activity. Talking about culture, of all things. The ladies are really mixing it up in there, having a great time. So, please come check it out, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.